Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me in the Bettors Box. It's BangTheBook.com's MLB Betting Podcast for June 29th. I'm your host, Adam Burke. This edition of the Bettors Box is presented by DSI Sportsbook. Head on over to DSI. Use the promo code BANG200. Get you 100% bonus for the sportsbook, 100% for the live casino upon that first deposit. We've got our Monday, Tuesday, Thursday format at least somewhat back to normal for now. We'll see what happens next Tuesday with the July 4th holiday. Not entirely sure that we'll have a show, but we'll have to see. We'll see what the schedule is for our guests there with that Tuesday takeover broadcast. However, I can tell you that we won't have a show on Monday or Tuesday of the All-Star break. We'll be back on Thursday to set up the second half of the Major League Baseball season. Good to get a little bit of a breather there. I try to decompress and completely get away from everything sports betting related if I can over those 4 days. There aren't a whole lot of breaks here in this industry, as you know. It's basically a 365-day-a-year thing. I mean, there are even games on Christmas to worry about. So when you get a chance to catch your breath, take full advantage of it if you can. Of course, I'll still be working on some college football stuff in the background, and you know, there's golf and NASCAR and all that there that week. But still, you know, I'm going to do the best that I can to get away from Major League Baseball because it is a grind, and it can be a very, very difficult thing to do over the 162-game season. I think it's 184 or 185 days, something like that, including off days. So it is a very long time of year. So I certainly recommend that everybody take a break over the All-Star break if you can. And I don't think that that's that hard of a request for everybody out there. Don't forget about my picks analysis piece over at bangthebook.com. Also my daily fantasy piece that goes up every day. Working on my college football power ratings. I've got 6 of the 10 conferences done here so far. Hoping to finish those up either late tonight or sometime tomorrow. I know it's a little bit of a late start, but with a wedding coming up here in about 6 weeks or so, took a couple week vacation in June, you know, just a lot of things going on. So I had to delay my start on those a little bit, but I do want to tell you that I will post my preseason power ratings, and I will also use those to write up some team previews with some season win total picks. So that should give you some sort of working idea. I'm going to write a primer piece talking about how I set up my power ratings, going through a couple of teams specifically and profiling them, and then applying those to our season win total previews. So we've got a bunch of those rolling out here very, very soon. There are a few drafts saved from another writer of ours, Tom Wilkinson, over at the site, and then I'm going to get started on those as well. So stay tuned to bangthebook.com. We're going to have plenty of college football stuff for you here as we get closer to the 2017 season. Lots of other content over at bangthebook.com as well. I mentioned golf and NASCAR already. We've got plenty of that stuff. We'll have some NBA draft recaps coming up here from another one of our writers. We'll have NFL stuff. Alan Moody's been posting his early NFL power ratings, so those are up over there at the website. There's tons of great stuff going on. Lots of things to keep you busy here at this time of the year as we keep looking at baseball but do start to transition over to football with the college football season now less than 2 months away and the NFL a little bit more than that. Those contests still going on over at bangthebook.com, the Daily Streaker Contest, monthly pick of the day, and then some of those cash prizes for top monthly win percentage, top ROI, and top number of units won. So plenty of things going on over at the website, plenty of things going on with Bang the Book Radio. Please keep it tuned. We are your one-stop shop for all of your sports betting needs and information. All right, we'll go beyond the box score today. I'll look at some teams that stand out here for a couple of different reasons. Then we'll go down the lines, and then I'll look at a couple of different things to talk about here later in the show. Had a listener question about where I get all my information, so I figure it's a good time to talk about that. We may have some new listeners and some people looking for some different statistics to use for handicapping, and then I'll also preview the weekend here. So lots of stuff to get to, tons of notes, may run a little bit long today. I apologize for that, especially here after the lengthy intro, but let's go ahead and get into this one with the Beyond the Box score segment. Well, I talk about the Philadelphia Phillies. They swept a quick two-gamer from the Seattle Mariners here on Tuesday and Wednesday. Aaron Nola, fantastic in game one, 7 innings, 5 hits, couple runs, walked 4, but did strike out 9. Really held this game in check for the Mariners until Edwin Diaz was able to give the game completely away for them. So the Phillies were able to get 4 unearned runs, put that one away in the late innings. And you know, this is one of those series that sort of illustrates what I've been talking about here in the sense of finding buy points for teams, because everybody's going to win at least 60 games in Major League Baseball this year. I don't think that there's a team out there that's going to lose 100 games. So when you look at a team like the Philadelphia Phillies, who probably has the best chance of doing it, or maybe the San Diego Padres, but I'll talk about them a little bit later in the show here, they're going to get better. They're going to have stretches when they play pretty well. And this is one of them. You know, they grabbed this two-game series from the Mariners. And, yeah, the Mariners had some late-inning problems. Edwin Diaz blew a save on Wednesday, and the Phillies were able to take a one-run victory there in that one. But, again, you know, bad teams are going to win at least 60 games. And the Phillies looked bad in Arizona, managed to salvage or take one of those games. I think they took the first game there in that series. But then steam came in against them. And the market has faded the Phillies very, very heavily here, to the point where you're regularly catching them plus 200, plus 210, 220, 230. And at some point, there's value in that. Because these bad teams are still going to win a fair number of games. And in order to win 60 games as a really bad team in Major League Baseball, you're going to have some of these upsets where you win as a plus 200 dog. We saw the White Sox do it a couple of weeks ago against the Blue Jays, where they were a plus 200 dog in the first two games of that series and won the series. So this is something that you want to watch out for here as we get deep into the season, because what happens is a lot of people just write these teams off. Well, the Phillies suck. Well, the White Sox suck. The Giants suck. And of course, we'll talk about the Giants here in a couple of minutes as well. But that's an overriding sentiment here. So you get those money line parlays that add a little bit more to those heavy sides. You know, you get situations where some of the sharp players on the overnights are going to push these numbers up. And sometimes those bad teams are going to win games. And that bad team won a couple of games here in this series. Now, let's look at this from a Seattle standpoint, because Seattle is a team, I've talked about them in the past. They're very fortunate to be around 500. The offense has been very good for them overall. The bullpen has not been good, and the starting rotation has been a disaster because of injuries. And yet they're hovering in that 500 range. They're actually 500 coming into this series. Lost these two games to fall two games under. Just 1-for-11 with runners in scoring position in this series. So that offense backed off a little bit. You know, not just from a standpoint of getting key hits, but from the fact that they had 11 at-bats with a runner in scoring position in this series against the Phillies. So it happens. You know, you look for those buy points. You look for those sell points. The Mariners were probably in a sell point. The offense has carried them for so long. The starting staff has not been good. The bullpen was not good in this series. And that's what happens. You can only count on the offense to carry you for so long. Variance happens a lot. And it happened right here with the Mariners in this series. Now, they got some bad news as well here in this series that Drew Smyly needs Tommy John surgery, so he'll be done pretty much until 2019 at this point. The average recovery time for Tommy John, somewhere around 14 months. Obviously, that puts us into late August, early September of next year. That means that Drew Smyly not going to be available until 2019 for whichever team he's on, because I certainly don't think it'll be the Mariners at that point. But Seattle's in a weird spot for this season, because the Smyly news obviously means they won't have him. James Paxton, an injury risk. His command is gradually coming back. Felix Hernandez, very mediocre so far, and he's been mediocre for the last year and a half. What do they do? This is not a legit contender. But they're only two games out of the wild card. There are actually five teams that are two games or less out of the wild card in the American League. Toronto, 3.5 out. So there aren't a whole lot of sellers. So if you're a team here on the fringes of the playoff chase, when you look at the American League, very top-heavy. The Astros obviously stand out. The Indians should stand out here as we go throughout the rest of the season. And then you've got a Boston, New York type thing in the East. Tampa Bay is kind of there as well. But in terms of the wild card, no one's going to run away and hide with these things. So if you're a team like Seattle, you don't have a lot of assets to trade anyway, because you've got some guys on some long-term deals, position players that you can't move. You don't have a whole lot that you can give up as a pitching staff. So they're kind of stuck in a little bit of purgatory here, to where, you know, they don't really, you know, they don't really know what they can do. So they're a team where, you know, you can probably assume that they're going to be inconsistent throughout the rest of the season. Other teams, maybe they sell, they go to a youth movement, or they buy, start to bring something in, try to inject some life into the ball club. The Mariners are a team that I think long-term is just going to kind of sit there. You know, they're just going to sort of hover around 500, and that makes them a tough team to back, because you want to back a team where you have a pretty good idea of what you're going to get, and when you've got a team that's going to be a 500-level ball club, you know, they go 3-3 over six games and alternate wins and losses, that can be kind of challenging. So watch out for the Mariners here, because I think that they're going to be a tough team to play on the rest of the way. After we got a spot to back them, when the offense got really hot, we started to back the Mariners, started to take some more interest in them. That interest has waned now, at least from my point of view. Nationals take two of the first three from the Cubs here. Jake Arrieta and John Lackey both struggling again in this series. Rotating fifth spot in the rotation, as we know. Kyle Hendricks still not back yet. We keep waiting on the Cubs to figure this thing out. And you know what? Maybe it's just not going to happen. The starting staff has not looked good. Chris Bryant awkwardly steps on third base, fielding a pop-up. Complete freak accident. Sprains his ankle. It's just one of those years for the Cubs. And I think that this speaks to what it takes to win a World Series. Everything went right for the Chicago Cubs last year. They were historically elite defensively. All their starting pitchers stayed healthy. And yet it still took them seven games against a Cleveland Indians team that was nowhere near 100% to win the World Series. So that's why it's so hard to sustain success in Major League Baseball. And those teams that win five, six division crowns in a row, really impressive what goes on with those teams. Because when you look at the Cubs here this year, you can see how hard it is to sustain that success year in and year out. But looking back at Jake Arrieta's start here, five swings and misses for Arrieta. That's very bad. You talk about a guy with the stuff that Jake Arrieta has, to have five swings and misses, that's a big-time problem. The stuff just doesn't have life right now. And when the stuff doesn't have life, generally you're looking at an injury situation. Arrieta has had some very high workloads here over the last couple of seasons. I've talked about some of the injury indicators with his velocity being down, some of that other stuff. I don't think that Jake Arrieta is working fully healthy right now. And we've been fading him. We've been talking about that throughout the year. I thought he was a fade candidate coming into the season. That's come to fruition now, and I just hope that there is nothing, you know, seriously wrong with him. But this is a guy that, heading into the All-Star break here, where he'll have one, maybe two more starts, I would probably look to fade him because I think he's got one eye towards that break to get a fresh start and also to just get away from pitching for a few days. The big story coming out of this Nationals-Cubs series, though, has been this whole Miguel Montero incident, which also included Jake Arrieta, where Montero basically threw Arrieta under the bus, said that he was too slow to home plate, and that negatively reflected on him as a catcher, with the Nationals having seven stolen bases. Well, this isn't a new thing for Miguel Montero. He butted heads with guys in Arizona, so he kind of got bounced from there. I think the Cubs figured that they had enough character in the locker room to keep somebody like him in check. Obviously, it worked for a while, but it doesn't work anymore. This is a good thing for the Cubs to get rid of Miguel Montero. Because, A, he's a horrible, horrible, awful defensive catcher. Just brutal. This is not all on Jake Arrieta. Grant Brisby of McCovey Chronicles wrote a really strong piece for SB Nation looking at Montero and his inability to throw out runners here this season. And the stats certainly speak for themselves when it comes to Montero. Decent hitter, but Wilson Contreras is a pretty good hitter, too. And he's an upgrade defensively as a catcher. This is a very good thing for the Cubs. When things aren't going well, when you've got a lot of frustrations to begin with, you don't need stuff like what Miguel Montero did. So it's a good thing for the Cubs going forward. I don't know necessarily if it means anything for them in terms of turning it around before the All-Star break or anything like that. But going forward, I think that this is a good thing for them. I want to focus a little bit here on some of the sequencing metrics, and I'm going to do that throughout the rest of this Beyond the Box Score segment. Looking at this Cubs-Nationals series, where the Cubs were 4-for-18 with runners in scoring position over the first three games, Nationals 10-for-34. Nationals have a 338 BABIP with runners in scoring position. That is the fourth best in Major League Baseball. The Cubs are at 263, which is the second lowest in Major League Baseball. So sequencing matters a ton. Really, when you boil it down, every single Major League Baseball game, to me, comes down to sequencing. And that's why you want to look to play on some of these luck metrics like BABIP, like left on base percentage, which is what the market has been doing a lot here this season. And you know, those are things that should normalize after a while. And I'll talk a little bit more about that here as we go forward. But the Nationals and Cubs, two very opposite ends of the spectrum. And that's why you see the Nationals doing so well and the Cubs toiling around 500. San Francisco Giants swept the Colorado Rockies here. The Colorado Rockies have now lost eight straight games. I've been waiting for this regression to hit. I've known that it's coming. I just wasn't sure when it was going to happen because I felt like there were a few other times where I would look at pitching probables or look at situations and go, okay, this is going to be it. The Rockies are going to fall back to the pack. Didn't happen. Now it has happened. And fortunately for them, they built up such a big cushion that they're 5.5 back in the National League West, but they're still way ahead in the second wild card standings. Still 11-3 in one run games, so there is some regression coming with that. But they have dropped 6 straight on the road. Talked about that on a couple of recent shows where this is a team that historically has not played well on the road. They had a very good home record. Now it's starting to regress a little bit. And what we see is that they don't have the ace to stop these prolonged streaks. That's really what you look for your ace to do is, you know, hey, we've dropped 2 or 3 in a row. Stop this for us. And a lot of times the aces respond. The Rockies don't have that guy. A couple of things here to look at with the Rockies as well. The first is that their BABIP with runners in scoring position, 355, highest in Major League Baseball. BABIP against at 303. So that's pretty much right in the normal range in terms of BABIP against. But this is a poor offense that has gotten very lucky because of the timing of hits. Again, it's challenging to fully evaluate the Colorado offense because of Coors Field, because of the negative effects of playing away from Coors Field. But this is an offense that when you look at them, nothing stands out, nothing jumps off the page. When you factor in Coors Field, some guys have some impressive slash lines, but their park-adjusted metrics have them more around league average. This was an offense that wasn't very good, but is overachieving because of what it has been able to do in those high leverage plate appearances. As that has fallen off, as they've made a lower quality of contact here of late, we're seeing what happens. This is a team that had been carried by a pitching staff that couldn't carry it. It was an unsustainable run for the starting rotation. It was overachieving. Now we're seeing what happens when they don't get that. But again, you know, the Rockies built themselves up a nice cushion, so they're not hurting, but this is obviously something that they would like to stop here in the very near future. They'll have that opportunity because from July 3rd to July 23rd, and yes, the All-Star break is included in there, the Rockies only have 3 road games. Now, their schedule really lightens up at home before the All-Star break. They play Cincinnati and the White Sox. Those are 2 poor teams. So I'll be curious to see how the Rockies are priced in the marketplace because regression was coming. It has come. So how is the adjusted price listed for this team when they take on some bad opponents at home? So I'll be watching the Rockies very, very closely here, see if we can get some opportunity to buy back on them or if we get opportunities to keep selling them. And again, we'll just have to check with that as we go forward here. But to see the Rockies regressing is something that I have expected. Fortunately, I haven't been able to take full advantage of it because I just didn't know when it was coming. But it has come now. I did tell you that I thought the Dodgers would sweep that series last weekend. So if you laid the really heavy chalk, you did well there in that one. But I didn't see this. I didn't see them getting swept by the Giants. But the Giants are kind of proving that Phillies theory. You know, no matter how bad a team is, they're still going to have these glimpses. They're still going to have these flash-in-the-pan series or situations where they start to play a little bit better. That was the case here for the Giants with that sweep. So you'll have to see how they parlay that into any possible success down the line here as we head into the All-Star break, but I thought that was a really interesting series. I talked about some sequencing things. I want to touch on that again here a little bit more before we go into the down-the-line segment. One team I think you may want to look at to get hot over these last 10 days before the All-Star break is the Toronto Blue Jays. Blue Jays have a 240 BABIP, batting average on balls in play, with runners in scoring position this season. Nobody was under 260 last year. They are the only team this season below 260, and they are well below it. As you know, the Cubs are at 263. I think the Indians are 274, 273, something like that, and they're 28th. So the Blue Jays have really had a string of bad luck here in high leverage plate appearances. That should normalize. That should level off. I think if you're looking for any team to back here over the last 10 days before the All-Star break, the Blue Jays are going to be that team. One thing I do want to mention here heading into the All-Star break, I'm not going to do an article on July 9th, the day before the All-Star break begins, because that day is the ultimate crapshoot. You don't know who wants to be there. It's really one of the few days in Major League Baseball where motivation is very, very hard to figure out. So I won't be doing a picks analysis piece there on that Sunday. We'll go ahead and wrap up our All-Star break stuff on Saturday. But that is a situation where you probably really want to limit your exposure, and it's a good time to mention that here. As we start looking ahead to the break. Biggest gaps in terms of batting average for and batting average against with runners in scoring position. The biggest one right now is the Baltimore Orioles. They have a 342 BABIP with runners in scoring position and a 276 BABIP against. Arizona Diamondbacks also have a 342 BABIP with runners in scoring position and a 278 BABIP against. So those are two teams where we're starting to see the market look for some regression. Obviously, it already hit for the Orioles, who have been terrible over the last 3 or 4 weeks. The market is betting against the Diamondbacks right now. Arizona is a team that has played extremely well of late, very, very good run differential, but they're a team that wasn't expected to be this good. So what happens is you start to look at the reasons why, and you see these luck metrics to where that is huge, that is very, very significant. That will regress to the mean. When it does, the Diamondbacks are going to be a team that loses a lot of close games, or maybe they have games where they just simply get blown out. The Diamondbacks are a fade team here going forward. This week, next week, after the All-Star break, until some of this stuff starts to normalize, they are a team that I will look to play against in a lot of different situations. A couple of other teams here with some big gaps. Colorado Rockies, of course, are another one. They have a 355 gap to a 303 gap, so that's a big one there for them. And again, you look at this situation with Colorado, and we're starting to see some of that regression show up here as we go throughout the season. Then the Milwaukee Brewers, they have a 318 BABIP for, 282 BABIP against, so a big gap there as well, although not as big as the rest of these other teams, which is why I think the Brewers will show some signs of coming back to earth a little bit, but not to the extent that these other teams will. Again, a 66-point gap for the Orioles is huge. Same thing for the Diamondbacks. It's huge. And there's only so long that you can carry that and sustain that to the level of success. So apologies for my inability to do basic grade school math there in that segment. But the fact remains that you want to look for these outliers. You want to look for these teams that are overachieving in a lot of these luck metrics and play against them accordingly. And the Diamondbacks are that team for me right now where I will look to play against them. A Rockies-type losing streak wouldn't surprise me. They have that ace in Zach Greinke, so maybe he's the guy that can stave off losing 8 in a row. But losing 10 of 12, something like that, prone for one of those here as we go forward because they've fared so well in some of these luck metrics. So I think that's an opportunity where you can look to go against a team like that. And again, apologies for sounding like such a dumbass there, being unable to do math. Just a lot of stuff going on, lots of different numbers. I mean, all the power rating stuff and all that. Not to make excuses, but just a lot running through my head right now. And apologies there for stumbling over all that. As far as the down the line segment goes, we saw some trends get bucked here this week. And I thought that that was really interesting. And I'm glad I could point some of these out here on today's show. And what we have to figure out as handicappers and bettors is, have the odds makers adjusted or has the market moved on from these things? So we'll follow them closely. I'll update them again on Monday and then, of course, on next Thursday's show as well. But we'll talk about some of those as we go forward here, and they'll be mixed in intermittently throughout this down-the-line segment. Tuesday, we saw some heavy Joe Biagini money to fade Kevin Gausman. Now, the thing about it is this. I just talked about the Orioles, how they're a fade team. They've been a fade team for a while. The Blue Jays are a buy team. But Joe Biagini is a depreciating asset. It's time to fade him. He was good. You know, he came over from the bullpen, pitched pretty well in a few starts, but declining swinging strike rate as his velocity goes down. Doesn't feel like the market has picked up on that yet. They're not going below the surface with Biagini. I am. Not to say I played against him to back Baltimore and Kevin Gausman in that start on Tuesday. I did not do that. But Biagini is not a guy that I would trust right now. So in looking at Toronto, a team that I think is a good bet here over the next week and a half, and then probably going into the second half of the year as well, Biagini is not a guy that will be a part of it for me. I don't have a whole lot of trust in him right now. Maybe the All-Star break rejuvenates him as a guy that was a reliever turned starter, but also you should be getting Aaron Sanchez back at that point. So, you know, maybe that's something that does take Biagini out of the equation, but still not a guy that I will look to back here in his last couple of starts going into the All-Star break. So our Marlins money come in. That's something that hasn't changed. That was with Dan Straley on the hill against the Mets and Robert Gsellman. Gsellman left that game hurt. Yet another Mets starting pitcher going down. It's an epidemic at this point. I've gone in on the Mets on this show before. Nothing has changed with that. Heads need to roll for how irresponsible they've been with some of their pitchers, and we'll see if that actually happens here. Saw Justin Verlander fade on Tuesday. That was against the Kansas City Royals. And what I'm noticing is that the market views the Tigers as being overpriced in every Justin Verlander start. I don't think he's taken on money in quite some time, and oftentimes it's been the opposite, where he's been faded. It feels to me like the odds makers haven't adjusted enough to what the current version of Justin Verlander is. Last year, he should have won the Cy Young. This year, all he does is bitch and complain about sign stealing and how the league needs to do something about it. Well, Justin Verlander, you need to do something about your bad command. Teams aren't stealing signs. Maybe they are. Maybe they are. But they're probably stealing signs off of other pitchers, too. And they're pitching better than you. So worry about yourself. Worry about your fastball command. Until I see something different from Verlander, he is a fade guy. It's just that simple. You know, because you look at him as a fly ball pitcher, works up in the zone with a fastball. Breaking balls are starting to sag off a little bit as the aging curve hits him. It just is what it is. A declining skill set based on a high workload last year, age, a high workload over the course of his career, and then a declining skill set because it's a skill set that hitters want to bat against now. With the launch angle craze, with the desire to hit the ball in the air, Verlander lets you do that. That's why teams are having a lot of success against him here this season. Money came in on the Chicago White Sox. This was interesting. It was Jose Quintana going up against Luis Severino. Now, Severino has been brilliant this season. White Sox were in the minus 155 range. That number came down in the minus 130 type range. Two moves in this series on the White Sox against right-handed pitching. Very, very surprising to see that because we saw for a good three-week stretch money come in against the White Sox every day when they faced a right-handed pitcher. That was put on hold here. Probably just the situation with the Yankees. Also, that Quintana's getting a little bit better, but the Yankees, I'll talk about them here in a couple of minutes, but they have some problems that they need to iron out. So a flip favorite situation, Cardinals, Diamondbacks. That was Carlos Martinez and Taijuan Walker in that one. The Cardinals are not a good team right now. And furthermore, there are problems behind the scenes. Mike Matheny needs to be fired. He, for one thing, he has no awareness or concept of game theory. But for another thing, the players don't like him. And when the players don't like a manager, it becomes very, very clear. You know, because they still have to work with that guy. They still have to talk with that guy. He's the first guy that they see when they go into the clubhouse. It creates a bad situation, especially when you're a team accustomed to success and you're not having it this season. It's just a bad situation. And you need that breath of fresh air. You need somebody different in there, whether it's somebody that just leaves you alone or somebody that actively tries to help you. Mike Matheny's not that guy. I think he gets fired here at some point this season. The Cardinals are not a team I'm interested in backing very much as we go forward here. And I don't know what morale is like there in that clubhouse. So a flip favorite situation between Atlanta and San Diego. Atlanta was a very small favorite. That was with Sean Newcomb on the hill. The Padres have taken a lot of money lately. Now, they didn't win this game. That was Juhulis Chacin in that one. But they've taken on a lot of money lately. And it's been in spots where they've opened a small home dog to some pretty mediocre teams. And the market has bet them into a small home favorite. So watch out for this one. This one's pretty interesting to me. I think the Padres have a decent lineup, have a decent bullpen. Starting rotation is awful. But they're taking on money quite often here lately. Colorado Rockies fade on Tuesday. We already talked about the Rockies here at the top of the show. Wednesday saw a heavy fade on the Phillies. That one didn't work. If you've got the bankroll for it, you play the opponent of the Phillies on the overnight and play the Phillies back on the first pitch. We've seen a lot of really heavy movement on them, 35, 40 cent movement against them here in the marketplace. If you've got the bankroll to do some arbitrage, you maybe can with the Phillies. Obviously, you're taking your chances backing a pretty bad team, but something to watch here as we move along throughout the rest of the season. Public books took money on the Rockies on Wednesday. The sharper books really didn't. Again, the Rockies lost that one, as we know. Blake Snell came back for Tampa Bay on Wednesday night. He was a loser against Ivan Nova and the Pirates. But money came in on the Rays. I kind of had a little bit of a lean toward the Rays in my picks analysis piece. Saw some money come in on the underdog there in that one. I think that was probably the unfamiliar lefty angle. That is something that a lot of sharp people do like to play and have had success with. Blake Snell, very unfamiliar lefty to the Pirates, but came back, looked basically like he did before he left, even though he had some really good rehab or some really good starts in AAA Durham to get back on track. But again, the major leagues are just a much different animal. Saw some Marcus Stroman money come in on the Blue Jays. That was against Wade Miley. get in on the Blue Jays overnight. Like I said, I think we see a lot of steam on Toronto over the next 10 days. Play the overnights. Enjoy your closing line value. Hope that they come through for you. So a Kansas City fade here with some money on Daniel Norris on Wednesday. This is rare because Daniel Norris has not been a guy that has been taking on money from sharp players on the overnights or in the early morning hours. And what I've found is that it's just irony. It's just coincidental. But when the market decides to back a guy that it has faded throughout the season, it seems like they draw losers in those situations. We've seen it with Irvin Santana. We saw it here with Daniel Norris, who didn't pitch very well in this game. But it's one of those things. It's just coincidental, but it's got to be frustrating for these guys that have the influence in the market, have been fading pitchers over and over and over again. The one time they back them, they bite them in the ass. And that was the spot there with Daniel Norris on Wednesday. Flipped favorite situation, Mets, Marlins. The Marlins still taking on money. That's not going to change, it seems. Masahiro Tanaka fade and a fade of the Yankees. Now, this was interesting because you had Carlos Rodon on the mound for the White Sox, and Rodon made 5 rehab starts, I believe, coming back from a shoulder injury. They were all terrible. He did not pitch well in those starts. Just no command, no control, no semblance of anything. This was a game that opened in the minus 150, minus 145 range. Some shops actually closed at Yankees minus 115. Now, I was busy with power ratings. I didn't come back and look at the market because I would have totally played the Yankees at 115 or 120. I'm upset that I didn't. But this is a very important lesson for you. You know, make sure that you're checking in on the market throughout the day. Because, yeah, it was easy to write off the Yankees and Tanaka in this one because they had a massive lineup problem. The bullpen, Dellin Betances was unavailable. Tyler Clippard was unavailable. Aroldis Chapman would have had to work for the third time in 4 days. It was a bad situation for the Yankees. Situationally, they were probably a fade. And that looked like what was going on in the market. And then we saw another round of line movement when the Yankees lineup actually came out because it was not a good one. But they scored 12 runs, didn't need the back end of the bullpen, and Rodon didn't pitch well. So this is a reminder to check the MLB market. You know, just because you write something off doesn't mean that it's not going to move into range later on in the day. I mean, I'm taking Tanaka minus 120 against a lineup that can't hit righties. I will take my chances with that. But I didn't come back and look because I was working on other things. Cost myself a winner at a decent price there. So yeah, stay vigilant. Keep in mind, you know, just because you see something early in the morning doesn't mean that's what it's going to be later in the day. And that was one that I could have taken advantage of. And it was just another lesson learned. You know, I've done this for a long time. I've been talking about it for a long time here on the shows. And still, sometimes you need that reinforcement of some of these things. That was one of them there for me. Here's some line moves for Thursday here. We're seeing some Lance Lynn money come in. I think it's a sign that the Diamondbacks fade is on because nobody has been betting on Lance Lynn this season. Big ERA to exit discrepancy. Gotten shelled a couple times here of late. Patrick Corbin has the high ERA and a lower xFIP. We generally see this move go the other way, but nobody wanted to lay 135 on the Diamondbacks. Came down into the minus 120, minus 115 range. And for Lance Lynn to be taking on money leads me to believe that that Diamondbacks fade on out there in the marketplace. So keep that in mind. Look for those overnight prices to go against the Diamondbacks. I think you're going to get some line value out of those. Washington taking on some money here. The Cubs will probably be down Chris Bryant for today. Bryant probably will go on the DL because why not? But that's with Joe Ross and John Lester there in that one. David Price getting steamed into a bigger favorite. That's not a surprise against Kyle Gibson and the Twins. No Marlins money as of yet. I presume that'll find a way to come in here at some point with Seth Lugo against Jose Urena. The Padres already a flipped favorite with Dinelson Lamet on the mound. He's a favorite over Jaime Garcia. But a couple of plays that I like for tonight here. I like the first 5 under between Tampa Bay and Pittsburgh. This one, of course, at PNC Park. Chris Archer, Jameson Taillon in this one. Archer is elite. We know that. He's a phenomenal pitcher. Also, as I wrote about my picks analysis piece today, there's some positive regression in Archer's profile, particularly with his ERA. His BABIP against is higher than it should be, given that he is inducing more fly balls this season, and his left on base percentage is a little bit low. So I think Archer is a guy that you can back at a good price because I think there's some positive regression coming for him. And then Jameson Taillon, he's got plus command against a power-dominant lineup in a good pitcher's park. Colby Rasmus is out for the Rays, so they've lost some of that left-handed power. I think Taillon can fare pretty well with this Rays lineup early on in the game. I know playing unders is a very scary proposition here this season. I'll play the first five. I'll take the bullpens out of the equation. If you like the full game or only have access to the full game, I'm okay with it. But I definitely prefer the first five here, where I think Archer and Tyon have a lot of success in this one. I also like the Brewers. Buying the Jimmy Nelson stock, I don't see any major outliers in his profile. I don't see anything that overly concerns me in terms of him falling back into some of the bad habits that he's had over the last couple of years. But I'm not interested in investing in Homer Bailey. Homer Bailey came off the DL, gave up 8 runs and inning and 2/3, I think it was, on 6 hits in his last outing. The Brewers are one of those teams that I've talked about this year. They've been very resilient. It's not quantifiable. It's more anecdotal than anything. But they've been really resilient. They haven't let things spiral out of control for them. So I think this is a situation where they do bounce back. They're not playing particularly well, but they had a lot of hands on deck helping out yesterday when Chase Anderson left hurt. I think that's something a team can kind of feed off of, you know, because they were put behind the eight ball early with Anderson going down. One of those things where everybody kind of rallies around each other. And they didn't win the game. They lost 4-3. But I think that's something that helps them here today and maybe helps them over the course of the weekend as well. Just because you've kind of got that renewed sense of purpose of, you know, hey, this guy's been great for us. He's down now. We need everybody to step up. And it's a good situational spot for them to step up here, facing Homer Bailey and just his second start back off of the disabled list. Had a question from one of my listeners and readers about where I get all of my information. So it's probably a good time to update that, as we do have some new listeners to the show here. A lot of information comes from FanGraphs. FanGraphs.com, my favorite website, probably the most trafficked website for me. The only thing that bothers me about them is that they don't have a mobile site it's easy to access when I'm at baseball games. But FanGraphs has all the data. I think it's also the easiest to navigate. So definitely a lot of FanGraphs stuff in my work. Baseball Savant's probably become my second favorite site. That's the home of StatCast data. Darren Willman's site is incredible. There's tons of great stuff there. Obviously, the leaderboard and the search are the two things that I use the most. But there's a lot of stuff. If you want to look specifically at individual players and some of their trends and batted ball data and spray charts and all that type of stuff, Baseball Savant is really, really great. I love everything that's over there. And as you know, I've tried to incorporate some of that StatCast data into my handicapping, because we need to find different edges. We need to find some of those inefficiencies that are out there. I think that may be one of them as we go down the line. Another one that I want to look some more into here is Baseball Prospectus. Now, I've been a member of Baseball Prospectus. I've used Baseball Prospectus, listened to their podcasts. They put out a ton of great content. Some of the things I really want to try to incorporate a little bit more, not this season, but next season, are some of the metrics that Baseball Prospectus has. Deserved run average, true average. They have lots of second and third level stuff over there, as I like to say, the 201 and 301 types of handicapping stuff. I mean, it basically honors courses over there, in terms of MLB statistics. Hard to pick up on the fly now, handicapping so many other things, but I want to look at this stuff over the winter, get familiar with some of these metrics, because you know everyone knows ERA and xFIP now, or ERA and Sierra, or BABIP, or left on base percentage. I think there's probably some stuff over there that we can uncover at Baseball Prospectus that can be really helpful for us. So if you're interested in taking a deeper dive into some of the numerical stuff with baseball, some of that stuff over there at Baseball Prospectus is really, really good. Baseball Reference is obviously another one. Tons of content. Some really good. They do a lot of good stuff with splits. A lot of their split data is very, very good. Also, they have some much better base running metrics than some of the other sites out there. So I do like Baseball Reference for some of that stuff. And if you're looking at minor leaguers that are getting called up, Clay Davenport's website, very, very good with minor league metrics, both offensive and defensive. So those are the five predominant sites that I use. Also Twitter. You know, Twitter is a great resource for finding stuff. If you follow the right people, Darren Willman, Mike Petrello, beat writers, the FanGraphs writers, all that type of stuff, you're going to get some good stuff there in bullet point form that you're kind of scrolling through your timeline and it just sticks. You know what I mean? So there's some really good stuff out there on Twitter as well. And a lot of times I hate Twitter. It's an awful, awful place, but also it's a great news feed and a great place to get quick information. So you know, make Twitter a part of your regular routine. You know, there's just a lot of good stuff on there. If you can sort through the stuff that's not so good. All right. So what am I looking at here over the weekend? Well, Boston and Toronto. The Yankees are in a precarious spot, as I talked about already. They've got some injuries, bullpen overuse. Some of their starting pitchers have kind of fallen back a little bit. Can somebody step up and make a push? You've got Doug Fister, Marco Estrada on Friday, Chris Sale, Francisco Liriano Saturday, Drew Pomerantz, and the aforementioned Joe Biagini on Sunday. Pitching matchups appear to favor the Red Sox. But, as I've talked about, Toronto is a team that I do want to look to back here. I do want to look to play into Toronto because they've got some of that stuff in line for positive regression. So I'm being very curious to see how this series is priced. Estrada will be a favorite on Friday. Sale and Pomerantz will be favorites on Saturday and Sunday. Tough for me with Liriano and Biagini, but if the price points are there, I will look to take Toronto as a live underdog in those spots because I think Toronto is a team that does have some positive regression going forward. Texas and Chicago. Mostly I'm just interested in this series because I want to see what happens when Austin Bibbins-Dirks and Tyson Ross make starts here in this series for Texas. Do we see money come in against Chicago like we have, or do we see Chicago get a little bit of love here? Texas is not a very good team either. They're not good one-run games. Chicago has a big bullpen advantage in this series. Cole Hamels and Derek Holland is going to be the pitching matchup on Saturday. Jose Quintana goes on Sunday. We might see some Chicago money in this series. You know, they're getting a lefty in Hamels on Saturday who hasn't looked very good. I don't think we see that White Sox fade against right-handed pitching. If they're facing Yu Darvish, it probably happens. They avoid him. So Chicago may be a team to back here this weekend, and the market may agree with me in that sentiment. So watch these lines. You may want to throw some lines out there with Chicago and see if anything bites, because I think this could be a good series for them. Yankees and Astros. Good battle here, but the Yankees obviously at less than full strength. You got Michael Pineda, Lance McCullers on Friday, Jordan Montgomery, Francis Martes on Saturday, Luis Severino, Mike Fiers on Sunday. Astros are catching the Yankees at a good time. We're going to see some big numbers here in this series, I think, because you've got two good bullpens, two pretty good offenses, some good starting pitchers. I think it's going to be a series for those that play fantasy or are interested in seeing big stat lines. I think you get them here in this series. Now, I will say this. Excuse me. For the Yankees, yeah, things aren't great. You know, the bullpen overuse is a problem. They have some injury issues. But they have to be very happy to get Pineda, Montgomery, and Severino here in this series. You got two guys with pretty good command. You've got Pineda, who has that swing and miss upside, but does give up some home runs. I'll be curious to see how the Yankees play this one out. I think Joe Girardi is a very good manager. I think he leverages his relievers well against a very tough Astros lineup. We know A.J. Hinch is a good manager because everything is driven by the numbers. So good series here. Very fascinating series. I don't know how I'll play this one, but I think that there's some good matchups coming up here in this series. One more series on the radar. That's the Nationals and Cardinals. Like I said, I'm not particularly interested in playing the Cardinals at all, but you've got Tanner Roark and Mike Leake on Friday, Gio Gonzalez, Michael Wacha Saturday, Max Scherzer, Carlos Martinez on Sunday. Reason I bring this series up, Sunday Night Baseball. No good betting opportunities coming out of Sunday Night Baseball here, though. The Cardinals host the Marlins. Nationals go back home and host the Mets. I would have thought about going against the Nationals because it's a 6:05 start time. So if the game does run late, that could throw the Nationals off a little bit. But Steven Strasburg's on the hill for that one. So, you know, if it was somebody else like a Roark, like a Gonzalez, maybe. But Strasburg's throwing the ball pretty damn well right now. So I don't know if we get a spot coming out of Sunday Night Baseball. A little bit out of breath from all the notes that I had for today's show, but hopefully you're able to bear with me here and stick it out throughout the episode. And if you were, thank you so much. And, you know, we're getting to the midpoint of the Major League Baseball season here. Teams are going to be approaching the 80, 81 game mark here over the weekend. Some of them, of course, getting into it early next week. And, you know, sample sizes are significant, but this has been a different baseball season than anyone that I can remember in the past. I talked about it with Sports Cheetah on Tuesday's show. You know, just there have been some different things, some variants, some things that we've had to get accustomed to. I will readily admit it has not been my strongest baseball season, but it's probably been the one where I've learned the most in terms of trying to find different strategies, trying to find different things to help out. And like I said, you know, it's going to be a year to limit exposure because there's a lot of trial and error, a lot of guess and check, a lot of using different things that are at your disposal. And there's an unknown with that. And there are a lot of unknowns when it comes to baseball and sports betting anyway. But this is one of those seasons where, you know, if you've had a bad first half, look for some things to do differently in the second half or limit your exposure or, you know, maybe just watch things. There's nothing wrong with not having any skin in the game, but still watching what's going on, because it's going to help you in the long run. And that's something that I feel like I've done a little bit more of this year, of, you know, maybe having a lower volume, but paying closer attention, if that makes any sense. So again, you always want to be learning, always want to be figuring out different things. And this year, with what's going on, with so many bad starting pitchers, with the big launch angle craze, the juiced ball, some teams that weren't expected to do a whole lot that are, some teams that were expected to be better than aren't. It's just one of those years where there's a lot of quirky things happening. So if you are frustrated with how it's gone so far, take the proper perspective. You know, understand that it is a tough thing to do. Baseball is a very tough sport to handicap for a lot of different reasons. And just keep your head down. Keep digging into the information. Keep trying to find those things that can help you in the long term, even if it's not the rest of the year, even if it's not in July, August, and September, even if it's next year. You know, just try to find those things that can work for you, and hopefully I can help you with some of that along the way. So do it for me today. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Have a happy, smart, safe weekend. I will talk to you again on Monday, and remember that you will never strike out when you're in the batter's box.